As an education lawyer, the most frequent way I see kids get into trouble in the school system is by not having their unique needs met. It is well known that when a school fails to meet a student's educational needs, that can lead to all kinds of problems, not just the student failing to learn the curriculum. It can lead to the student being frustrated, sometimes to the point of dropping out, or the student having behavior problems, getting suspended or expelled, and in all cases, definitely not achieving what the student should in school. Often, the resources for children with special needs are greater in the public school system than in private schools, which only have the resources that parents pay for. But getting public schools to accommodate a child's special needs can be challenging for parents. So, in this episode of my podcast, I will explain a bit about how special education works in the Ontario public school system so that parents can get their children the help that they need. I'm John Schumann, a lawyer with 20 years' experience practicing education law in Toronto. In this podcast, I'm going to explain how parents can navigate Ontario's special education system in public schools. Ontario's publicly funded education system has been set up to provide additional assistance for children who face challenges or barriers to their ability to receive an education. That assistance is mandated by the Education Act, several regulations, several Ministry of Education policies, and policy procedure memoranda, which are binding on school boards.
Oh.
Cynically, there's a viewpoint that teachers, school administrators, and boards are not open with parents and students about the special education resources available, especially when it comes to families from historically disadvantaged groups, such as children in care of children's aid societies, or parents who otherwise lack resources to understand or pursue the legislated channels to get assistance for their children. School boards adamantly deny this. However, it can be remarkable to see the difference in approach from school administrators when a parent says something that makes it clear that they know how the system works and what rights students have by saying something like, "I require you to convene an IPRC for my child as required by Regulation 191 of 98.
Why don't you have your lawyer call my lawyer?"
Since there are procedures set up within the education system to assist children with special needs, ranging from multiple disabilities to giftedness, it is necessary to follow those procedures before going to the Human Rights Tribunal or going to court. Following those procedures properly usually gets the child the assistance he or she needs more quickly and at much lower cost than litigation.
Ah.
If parents still run into trouble, then having done the right things and taken the required steps makes it far easier and more likely that the parents will be successful before the Human Rights Tribunal or in court. The first step that parents should take is to get help and advice from one or more professionals and have those professionals provide a report to the school about what the student needs. The courts have recognized that teachers are the experts when it comes to educating children, including children with special needs. Since the Supreme Court's decision in Eaton and Brant County Board of Education, courts have shown great respect for the decisions of educators about how to educate children, including how to accommodate special needs while at school. In addition, the courts and the Human Rights Tribunal have found that parents must accept reasonable accommodations offered by the school board and cooperate with accommodations that teachers are putting in place. Often, parents feel that what the school board is doing is inappropriate for their child or feel that it is not enough. But parents are not experts in education. They will not get what they want based on their own opinion. Parents need the opinion of an expert who knows more about their child's identifying needs than teachers do. Teachers are not the ultimate authority on everything, even though they sometimes believe that.
Oh.
Parents need someone with more qualifications than a teacher with respect to their child's needs, and they need that expert to use those qualifications to tell teachers things that the teacher is not trained to know about their students' particular needs.
Ah.
Parents do need a professional who is an expert on their child's needs, not just a professional who is willing to say what the parents want. The professional skills and training have to be greater than the teacher's with respect to the child's particular needs.
Oh.
So if there's a medical issue, you need a doctor who specializes in that condition. If there's a learning disability, you need a psychologist that knows about those. For speech problems, a speech therapist can be helpful. For physical disabilities, an occupational therapist can tell teachers things they did not know about how to help the student.
Oh, yeah.
For the most part, these experts can give teachers a greater understanding of students' needs than the teachers have based on their own training. Good teachers crave this additional knowledge and understanding and put it to good use. On the other hand, failing to support the healthy development of a student is professional misconduct for teachers and may be the basis of a complaint to and discipline by the Ontario College of Teachers. Getting an expert report, which is more than a handwritten doctor's letter that explains the child's needs and recommends what the school can do to help the child succeed in school, is usually the most important and valuable thing parents can do for their child with special needs. The more explanation and detail that report has, the better. The school board can refer a student for assessment by a school board employed professional or an affiliated agency. But the waiting time for funded assessments is often unreasonably long, sometimes several years. In addition, the scope and depth of analysis is often limited by funding and sometimes time constraints. The professionals may be concerned with resources available to the school board, and parents may not trust that the professional employed by an adversarial board will do what's best for the child. There may be better professionals available to the parents, particularly if they follow the advice of advocacy groups for their child's condition or special needs. If parents have a limited budget to spend in advocating for their child, their money is often best spent on a psychoeducational assessment or paying the child's doctor to do a proper in-depth report, although some doctors won't charge parents for this, or perhaps getting a private occupational therapy assessment. Private reports are often comprehensive and really useful in telling teachers what they need to know to help the child learn in school. Also, reports done by experts who know the education system or who have help from friendly special education teachers or administrators will include the particular phraseology to trigger funding from the Ministry of Education for the student. The next step is to have the school convene an Identification, Placement, and Review Committee, also known as an IPRC. With a report or other formal diagnosis, schools will often start working on an individual education plan or IEP. While that is a very positive step, it does not guarantee that the accommodations will be provided. Also, it does not guarantee that educators fully understand the child's needs. It does not guarantee that funding is in place, and it does not guarantee the IEP will be appropriate. The formal way for a student to enter the Ontario special education system is through the IPRC. The purpose of the IPRC is to formally identify the student's needs and place the child in the appropriate learning environment with the appropriate resources. The IPRC's decision may be a basis for a funding grant. In addition, the IPRC can review accommodations to consider they are appropriate on a yearly basis. And the IPRC forms the basis of the creation of the IEP, which must be completed within 30 days of the IPRC. As part of the IPRC, the school board has to identify the student has special needs. This is essentially a legal mission that the school board has to provide accommodations. It is difficult for the board to deny the need to accommodate special needs after doing an IPRC. Doing so would be discriminatory. In addition, once the school board has set out what accommodations it feels are appropriate, it is difficult for the school board to refuse those accommodations or say that it is unable to provide them.
Why don't you have your lawyer call my lawyer?
The IPRC is a very useful tool for parents to force the school to provide for their child's special needs. Once there is an IPRC decision, the school's help for the child is no longer voluntary, but statutorily required. Boards can identify students as having special needs in any of five categories, the names of which do not really describe them. Those categories are behavioral, communication, intellectual, physical, and multiple exceptionalities. Those are labels, but only educators really know how much they include and how inaccurate the terms can be. For example, behavioral includes socialization issues, anxiety disorders, depression, and many other needs. Communication is not just being blind or deaf, but also includes autism, speech impediments, learning disabilities, and many more. Intellectual needs include both developmental delays and giftedness. Parents should not be concerned about labels. They help get their children the extra assistance they need. In addition, they can help not hinder applications to college, university, or special programs, including special programs within the board. They can also result in funding that will get their child more assistance or time with an educator. The individual assistance that many parents pay for outside of school or at a private school can be available for free after an IPRC. Once a student is identified as having special needs, the school then has to make a decision on placement. But placement does not refer to being in a particular class or with a particular teacher. Rather, it refers to what type of supports the student needs. Those placement options are a regular class, A regular class with special education teacher providing advice to the teacher, called indirect support. A regular class with direct assistance from the special education teacher or the professional in the regular classroom. A regular classroom with withdrawal assistance, where the student leaves the classroom for part of the day and goes to a special education class or resource room. A special education class with integration for part of the day with other students, or a special education class which is the only classroom the student attends. The IPRC decision technically does not set out the precise accommodations, but practically it does set out what types of accommodations are necessary for the student to succeed in the chosen placement.
Oh.
Critically, it also sets out what types of accommodations the school board is able to provide to the student, which makes it even more difficult for the school to not provide those accommodations. The next step is the teachers create an individual education plan, or IEP, which sets out more precisely what accommodations will be made in the classroom. Some boards create the IEP by cutting and pasting from the IPRC decision. There's a lot that goes into creating an IEP. The parents are to be consulted in drafting it. However, the IEP is to be created by the experts in education, the teachers, incorporating the views of the other specialized experts in the child's needs.
Ah.
School boards are only required to provide reasonable accommodations, not any accommodation for the child. It is not the school board's responsibility to ensure that every student, regardless of that student's particular challenges, is accepted to the university of his or her choice. School boards are required to provide the student with meaningful access to education and must take the steps up to the point of undue hardship required to allow the student to access to an education that reflects the appropriate goals for the student. The IPRC is supposed to be a committee process where the decision is made by consensus and the parents are part of the committee and part of the decision-making process. It is not supposed to be an adversarial process. However, parents can feel that it is adversarial, or even that they are being bullied, with several school board teachers and officials sitting opposite them and telling the parents what is going to happen for the child. Sometimes parents feel that they cannot contribute, even though it is their right to participate and provide their input. Parents are allowed to bring a support person or an advocate, although that may be less helpful, or a lawyer or anyone else to assist a parent at the IPRC. Often the most useful person for the parents to have present is the child's assessor, doctor, or treatment provider, or a qualified expert on the child's diagnosed needs. That professional can be really useful in explaining the child's needs and answering any questions while subtly advocating for the child and causing the committee to gravitate toward accepting the recommendations in the report, particularly the ones the parents want. As part of the committee discussion, such professionals can create a deeper understanding of the child's needs and gain acceptance for why those accommodations should be in place.
Oh.
At the end of the IPRC meeting, there will be an IPR decision, which is in writing, and at least the skeleton of an IEP. Ideally, and most often, everyone will have agreed to the identification and the placement. It is up to the school, often the special education resource teacher, or CERT, to finalize the IEP. There is no formal appeal of an IEP, although an IEP that is inconsistent with the IPRC may be subject to an Ontario Human Rights application on the basis that the student's accommodations are not based on the student's formally identified needs. If parents disagree with their child being identified as exceptional under one of the categories that I just set out, or they have been refused the identification, child is exceptional, or the placement is not of the type that the parents want, although they do not get to pick the particular classroom or the specific classroom teacher, the parent can appeal to the Special Education Appeal Panel.
Ah.
The procedure for the Special Education Appeal Panel is set out in an Ontario regulation. Essentially, the procedure is as follows. The parents have 15 days to file an appeal with the secretary of the board. Within 15 more days, the parents must select one member of the appeal board. The school board must select one member of the appeal board, and that those two members must select a third member to be the chair. None of those three people may have had any prior involvement with the matter under appeal. Note, there is no restriction on who the parents can choose.
Ah.
They may choose a person who is an expert in their child's needs and how they can best be served in the education system. The person does not need to have any relationship with the child's school board. It is the responsibility of the school to get the IPRC decision, all reports, and all their documents together to the appeal board. Unless the parents agree, the appeal hearing must be heard within 30 days of the selection of the chair. The chair can invite anyone who can contribute to the issues to attend the meeting. The appeal board makes recommendations to the school. The school has 30 days to advise what course of action they are going to take with respect to the student. The board does not have to follow the Special Education Appeal Board's recommendations. However, if it does not, or the parents are dissatisfied with the plan for the child, the parents can appeal to the Ontario Special Education Tribunal, one of the Ontario Social Justice Tribunals, along with the Child and Family Services Review Board, the Human Rights Tribunal, and the Landlord-Tenant Board, and many more. The Ontario Special Education Tribunal only has jurisdiction to hear appeals of identification or placement of a student. The Human Rights Tribunal of Ontario has jurisdiction that is broader than that of the Ontario Special Education Tribunal. Consequently, it can address far more special education problems than the Ontario Special Education Tribunal. However, the Human Rights Tribunal only hears cases that relate to discrimination on a prohibited ground of discrimination or an analogous ground. There must be discrimination. Conduct that is merely harassing or abusive without being discriminatory cannot be the subject of a human rights complaint. For example, bullying that is not based on disability, race, sexual orientation, or other similar grounds does not qualify. The Human Rights Tribunal has broad jurisdiction to grant relief that exceeds just monetary awards. It can make mandatory orders that require school boards to do or not do certain things. So it can require a school board to provide specific accommodations to a child. However, the monetary awards, while not capped, tend to be lower than in court. In addition, the Human Rights Tribunal's rules of procedure do not give it the power to award costs, which means the tribunal cannot order the school board to pay the parents' legal bills. So parents who use lawyers to navigate the Human Rights Tribunal's process or to assist them at the hearing, which is very much like a trial, may have difficulty coming out ahead financially. Still, the process is simpler and less costly than court. The Human Rights Tribunal has a Child and Youth Division for hearing cases involving children.
Why don't you have your lawyer call my lawyer?
Cases related to alleged discrimination experienced by children are diverted to adjudicators and mediators who have special expertise in children's issues. Since most cases of discrimination involving children somehow involve schools, because school is the institution with which children most frequently interact, the Child and Youth Division sees a lot of cases involving children with special needs and their schools. For these cases, the Human Rights Tribunal often draws on adjudicators from the Child and Family Services Review Board or the Ontario Special Education Tribunal, so they understand the school system well. In addition, the Child and Youth Division adjudicators are prone to decide that any case involving discrimination affecting a child's needs needs to be resolved quickly. This is for the same reason that court cases involving children should be resolved quickly. When going to the Human Rights Tribunal in relation to a child with special needs, it is important to immediately apply for the expedited process, both to make sure the process goes quickly and to get into the Child and Youth Division. When you go to the Human Rights Tribunal, the first step is usually mediation. Those mediations can happen really quickly, possibly within a month of bringing the application for Child and Youth Division cases. As the Child and Youth Division mediators are familiar with the school system, they can be quite helpful in resolving issues and building bridges between the family and the educators to try to prevent hard feelings that prevent the implementation of any solutions and assist in a positive learning environment. In addition, if the claim has any merit, school boards can be very motivated at mediation because they do not want a human rights decision stating that they mistreated a child with special needs. Keep in mind that having a child with special needs does not guarantee success at the Human Rights Tribunal. The following is the test of the Human Rights Tribunal. Has the applicant parent established that the child was denied meaningful access to an education because of a disability? If so, has the respondent board established that the reason the applicant was denied meaningful access to education was because he was unable to fulfill the requirements necessary to do so because of a disability, or that the requirement that prevented the meaningful access to education was reasonable and bona fide? And if so, has the school board established that it was unable to accommodate the child? Note that school boards are only required to provide reasonable accommodations, and they are not required to provide an education to a student that a disability makes it impossible for that child to receive. For example, schools are not required to ensure that a quadriplegic is able to do push-ups, but they are required to ensure that a quadriplegic student is able to participate in gym class to the fullest extent that the disability will allow, provided the accommodations to do so are reasonable. The existence of an identification through the IPRC establishes that a student requires accommodations to a meaningful access to an education and effectively deals with the first part of the test at the tribunal. The second and third parts of the test are established through the IPRC or IEP, and that the school board is committed to provide certain accommodations and just does not provide them. whether an accommodation is reasonable or whether it will allow a student to have meaningful access to an education is an issue that may arise at the IPRC and may persist all the way through to the Human Rights Tribunal or court application. But the issue will be well established prior to litigation if it has been discussed at the IPRC. Repeated suspensions or an expulsion almost never serve an educational purpose. Repeated suspensions or an expulsion that is related to an identified disability or other need of the student is a failure of the school system. A school will not fix a learning disability, mental health issue, or development delay that causes inappropriate behavior by suspending or expelling a student. In cases where a student condition has been diagnosed, the student's behavior is often a predicted consequence of a failure to accommodate the student appropriately. Under Section 2 of Ontario Regulation 472 of 07, principals are required to consider whether a student has the ability to control their behavior before suspending or expelling a student. If the school's failure to accommodate creates frustration or other strong emotions in the student, this consideration may preclude suspension or expulsion. Further, under that same regulation, before suspending or expelling a student who has an IEP, a principal is required to consider whether the behavior was a manifestation of a disability identified in the pupil's individual education plan and whether appropriate accommodation has been provided and whether the suspension or expulsion is likely to result in an aggravation or worsening of the pupil's behavior or conduct. These considerations make it extremely difficult to suspend or expel a student for behavior that is a result of the school's failure to accommodate an identified special need. Parents of such students should always consider appealing a suspension or expulsion, as the considerations I mentioned are strong arguments and the appeal process can highlight the school's failure to accommodate. Repeat suspensions or expulsions are also a good basis for a human rights tribunal or court application. If you need more information about education law and children's rights or information about family law issues, check out www.schumannlaw.ca. There are thousands of pages of legal information on that website, links to additional education law resources, and links to reach my office to meet with either me or one of my colleagues. You can also set up an appointment to speak to us by calling 416-446-5847. It is always best to get a lawyer who can give you expert advice specific to your situation or your child's situation. In addition to my website, keep up to date on family and children's law issues by liking my Facebook page, following me on Twitter at @SchumannFamLaw, and finding me on LinkedIn. Of course, please also subscribe to my YouTube channel and hit the notification bell to stay up to date. Get the audio versions of my podcasts on all major podcast services, such as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many more. Or you can get all the episodes at www.schumannlaw.ca. Just look for podcasts in the drop-down menu. Thanks for participating in this podcast. We will get together again soon.